Okay, so this talk is going to be on loving your enemies, and I'm going to try to keep it short enough that we actually have time to talk and interact. I am not here to lecture you about how you should feel. I'm inviting you to turn inwards and explore your relationship to a truth that I think you know for yourself, but which may be difficult to enact at times. So, in part, this is the subject is just brought about by what's going on in the world. But in particular, last weekend, when we, last Sunday, when we chanted our, we did our chanting service and we do our merit list where we chant and we say we dedicate the merit to, and we name people who are ill or in difficulty, and we name people who have died. And so you the only the names get on that list because Sangha members submit them, because they just, you know, we don't make that up. We just somebody requested. And so we chanted Charlie Kirk's name. And the person who requested this did not in any way mean to endorse Kirk's views. And, you know, I don't know their reasoning, but I, you know, you could see it as an acknowledgement, maybe, that all beings have Buddha nature. But because of greed, anger, and ignorance, sometimes they don't enact that. We could see it as praying that somebody who apparently failed to see their connection to all beings in this life will learn something in the next life, or, you know, whether you think of next lives literally or metaphorically, we may be praying that wherever this karma is reborn, that hate will be transformed to wisdom and compassion. In theory, we dedicate merit equally to all beings. But when this name was read, a couple Sangha members left. And one in particular belongs to one of the groups of people dangerously disparaged by Kirk. So, should we have someone on our list who threatened the safety and well-being of one or more of our Sangha members? Kind of calls to mind, if Hitler had just died, would we put him on the list? I mean, to me, it matters a great deal that Kirk's harmful actions were, as far as I can tell, limited entirely to speech. I mean, arguably, but it was primarily provocative speech. And really, a lot of the speech is, you know, triggers reactions, but is not quite as hateful as we might think. He said Martin Luther King was a terrible person. Okay, that seems really dumb, but I mean, he didn't say, you know, I didn't call for, you know, the KKK to come back and start persecuting people. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to get into all that. And we know speech is also an action and has karma. Should we put people on the list only when we judge them worthy? If so, where do we draw the line? Should we exclude a public figure or a family or friend, a family member or friend, because they held views we find distasteful? And I don't want to spend this talk or any of the Q&A debating how we should feel about Charlie Kirk. But if people have thoughts about our merit list, you're welcome to bring that up. What I want to focus on is how we practice with the teaching to love your enemies. So most of us have Judeo-Christian backgrounds, and in addition to Buddhism, so figured to point out these unequivocal teachings of loving your enemy from the Bible, Luke. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. And from Peter, do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you were called, and you may obtain a blessing. And then read a little bit from the Loving Your Enemies sermon delivered by Martin Luther King at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. He says, in the fifth chapter of the Gospel as recorded by St. Matthew, we read these very arresting words flowing from the lips of our Lord and Master. You have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that despitefully use you. For you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Certainly these are great words, words lifted to cosmic proportions. This is King still. And over the centuries, many people have argued that this is an extremely difficult command. Many would go so far as to say it just isn't possible to move out into the actual practice of this glorious command. They would go on to say that this is just additional proof that Jesus was an impractical idealist who never quite came down to earth. So the arguments abound. But far from being an impractical idealist, Jesus has become the practical realist. The words of this text glitter in our eyes with a new urgency. Far from being the pious injunction of a utopian dreamer, this command is an absolute necessity for the survival of our civilization. Yes, it is love that will save our world and our civilization. Love even for enemies. Now let me hasten to say that Jesus was very serious when he gave this command. It wasn't plain. He realized it's hard to love your enemies. He realized that it's difficult to love those persons who seek to defeat you, those persons who say evil things about you. He realized that it was painfully hard, pressingly hard, but he wasn't playing. So I could go on and on with quotes from Buddhist scripture that back Jesus up, but I'll just share a couple. From the Dhammapada, one of the oldest things, so this is the words of the Buddha. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind and suffering follows, as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never-departing shadow. He abused me, attacked me, defeated me, robbed me. For those carrying on like this, hatred does not end. She abused me, attacked me, defeated me, robbed me. For those not carrying on like this, hatred ends. Hatred never ends through hatred. By non-hate alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. Many who do not realize that we here must die, for those who realize this, quarrels end. And an alternative older translation is, for hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. This is an old rule. So I think the more accurate translation is non-hate, but, you know. And then, of course, we have the Metta Sutta, also words of the Buddha. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Even as a mother protects with her life, her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. So, like I said, I could go on and on with scripture quotes that back, you know, are along these same lines, and in no place in Buddhism is there anything that says, well, in this case, you should probably nurture hatred, because that would be good. So what is this attitude? It's like this attitude of mind, heart, and body. We are right to doubt what we think it means, right? When we think of an awful situation and we think, oh, but you should love your enemies. And you go, wait a second. Like, we're right in that doubt. Our dualistic minds think that if I love, it means I forgive, I ignore someone's harmful actions, I deem their horrible actions and views as acceptable, I stop resisting the things they're trying to do, I refrain from calling them out, I consider their hatred of us justifiable, turn it inward, take responsibility for it somehow. In other words, our dualistic minds jump to the conclusion that in order to love our enemies, we imagine we have to capitulate to them. Capitulate means surrender and cease resisting. And we can hold this idea as individuals, you know, about our personal relationships, or we can hold it within groups or cultures or nations. In order to resist, in order to defend ourselves, we must nurture hate. If we turn to love instead, we need to stop resisting and need to seek to become friends with the people who are trying to destroy us. But it's not the case that in order to love our enemies in the way that we're talking about, that we have to capitulate. So I want us to repeat, well, don't literally have to do it, but repeat over and over. Loving my enemies does not mean I have to capitulate to them. Loving my enemies does not mean I have to capitulate to them. So given that's the case, then what does it mean? What does this attitude mean? In his speech, Martin Luther King talked about the three Greek words for love, different kinds of love, right? Eros, powerful, beautiful, aesthetic love, such as we have for romantic partners or even for nature or for God, you know. And then there's philia, which is like the love of friendship, mutual regard and respect and, you know, affection. And then there's agape. And these are King's words. Agape is more than eros. Agape is more than philia. Agape is something of the understanding. Agape. Sorry. Okay. Agape is something of the understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. It is a love that seeks nothing in return. It is an overflowing love. It's what theologians would call the love of God working in the lives of men and women and non-binary people. People. And when you rise to love on this level, you begin to love people, not because they are likable, but because God loves them. You look at every person and you love them because you know God loves them. And they might be the worst person you've ever seen. So, this is exactly the same as what in Buddhism we call metta or goodwill. We seek to extend our circle of goodwill further and further. The practice, right? Metta is just something you might feel, goodwill, but the practice of metta is to try to extend that. We might feel it for certain people, not so much for those people, whatever. But we're trying to extend that sphere, and ideally, eventually having it be without limit. But it's totally acknowledged that that is very difficult, right? You can extend it this far, and then it's like, I don't have it in me to extend it, you know, that far toward these people who have hurt me, or these people I'm afraid of, or whatever. We often reach a limit where our heart just can't open. And some of us may be able to extend goodwill to a certain person on our merit list, you know, some sense, but there may be others not ready to do so. And this should never be a matter of judgment, as if we're morally superior if we can extend love. You can't extend the love, right? So why? I want to leave plenty of time for discussion. And so there's a whole topic around like, well, how? If you want to like open your heart and feel goodwill unconditionally, how do you do that? That's all, you know, a whole talk in and of itself. But I want to focus, and it can come up in the Q&A if you want, but I really want to focus on why. Because if in a way we're not even willing, then it doesn't, talking about why doesn't matter, right? If we reach a point where we're like, I don't actually think I want to do that. So talking about why. When we experience the internal shift from anger and resentment and fear, even hatred, towards someone, we feel that shift toward goodwill. And I honestly really prefer this to the word love. I mean, love points to something important, but it seems like a very high bar, right? Like, start with goodwill. Start with at least just, you know, love in our language is much more associated with eros or philia, right? Not this agape. So let's use the word metta or goodwill. What does it feel like when we have that shift? And hopefully all of you have experienced at some point, you know, in some relationship and some attitude, that you've made that shift from like really feeling a lot of resentment, anger, and fear, outrage, to just, you know, letting that go. To me, it feels like an unclenching of something inside. So Jinryu recently talked in her Dharma talk about not losing sight of the true Dharma. Not losing sight of the emptiness of self and other, and therefore the non-separation of self and all being. So really, in reality, with a capital R, this the flow of goodwill and compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity, that like it would be flowing if we weren't closing it off, right? If we're kind of just like an open field, and if we close it off, it stops flowing. But in a way, if we just get out of the way, it starts to flow. When I am resisting this flow, it takes energy. It blocks the flow within me. The tension causes sadness and further perpetuates the anger, resentment, fear, and even hatred. When I find a way to release this, and not through force of will, not lecturing myself on how I should feel, but through an honest internal investigation with self-compassion, right? When I find a way to release some of that, I feel free. The past and present actions of the person I have previously held a grudge against no longer feel so personal. I'm better able to see how they were acting out their own delusions and suffering. I can see what in the past I should take responsibility for and what was totally beyond my control. In terms of relating to that person, if it's still necessary, I feel much more firmly grounded in my own being. Clearer, stronger, ready to resist without hatred or anger, but also ready to be flexible if things change. It feels like emerging from a tiny cramped space and then like standing up, being able to stand up, stretch and look around, deciding where to go next. What does it mean to love or feel goodwill for someone, even if they are, as even Martin Luther King said, the worst person you've ever seen? Or at least extend goodwill to them. Or more accurately, stop withholding goodwill from them. Do we like them, approve of them, endorse their actions, capitulate to them? To answer this question, we have to leave the realm of transactional relationships. As if by extending goodwill to this worst person we've ever seen, we're going to empower, encourage, enable them to continue their harmful actions. But our goodwill isn't like a spiritual gift, right, that flows from me to you, to this terrible person who can then like take it and build their case, right? They can take our meta and be like, yeah, see, you know, and excuse their actions, somehow decreasing us, putting us in a one down position while they get to go, ha, 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 I've got your meta now, right? Absolutely. And if they did, I mean, even if they tried to, they would find out that this, it would only undermine their cause, right? Look at what my enemy is not bothered by me. My enemy is, you know, extending goodwill. Like, hey, you know, maybe it would undermine their cause fatally. So if goodwill isn't a spiritual transaction, what is it? And we can only answer this question for ourselves within our own direct experience, right? Just like everything in Buddhism, we're not asked just like, oh, this is the way I should be. And so I should just kind of impose this form from the outside and try not to be, you know, try to love my enemies. But instead, it's asking us to investigate, you know, what would it be like to open up and not be trying to, you know, resist that flow. And we might even find out that it doesn't feel like what we expect, right? It's not a matter of looking at someone who has injured us and suddenly being like, oh, they really are a nice person. I mean, I was sitting today during Zazen thinking about, you know, I have had the kind of strange to call it good fortune, but I've never been raped. If I had been, What would it mean to extend goodwill toward my rapist? When I look internally, that does not, none of it feels good to be like, well, you know, he has his problems too. Like, none of it is about excusing, none of it is about liking. In a way, none of it would be about that person at all. It would be about, like, I often like to think of it as people have hurt us in the past or they're terrorizing us now. Like, in some ways, we allow them to further terrorize us by holding on to this anger and resentment, where it's like, no, I'm not going to let you continue fucking with my love, right? Not going to hold on to that. That doesn't say, you know, like, hey, we're not capitulating. We're taking what measures we need. We're setting what boundaries we need. But it does feel like, yeah. I guess I'll leave it there and find out what you guys think it feels like. James.
I wanted to speak up. Sorry, I just jumped in because what was interesting about that whole meritless situation is I actually put his name on the merit list. And then, because I have special secret access to the merit list, I thought to myself a couple of days later, I thought, I wonder if anyone else has. And then I saw Jinri of it put his name on the merit list. I was like, oh, yeah, you know. And I removed it, whatever. But I got to thinking about it. Yeah, why? Why? Because, and it was, I put it in the framework of so much of this practice for me. I don't know about others, but there's a bit of a degree of fake it till you make it. Like, I'm going to go forth and do the thing that my small mind says, no, I don't know about that. I don't like that. You know, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, I'm going to go to session. I'm going to sit even when I don't feel like it. Or I'm going to, you know, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Because putting myself in that frame of mind, even though I'm arguing with myself about it, is for me, like, that's how I can grow, you know. So, yeah, I put his name on the list and anybody else, but I'm just like, I'm kind of faking it till I make it because I don't feel that. I don't really like feel that type of compassion for him. But as I sat with it more, I thought, oh, the reason that I wanted to do that, and the reason that I have expressed to those who, you know, when any kind of conversation, social media, personal conversations about that event, I've kind of pushed back on the real negativity. People, you know, the Schadenfreude and whatever. It's like, what it really came down to for me is I'm trying to be the person he could not be. He couldn't extend goodwill and compassion to everybody. So in the wake of his death, I feel like I need to fill that gap a little bit, even though it only matters to me, it doesn't matter to anybody else, but to not fall victim to the same greed, anger, and ignorance that he was suffering. It's like, he was out there in the world doing this, and now, you know, I can't fall victim to that too. I've got to be better. I've got to be bigger. Or whatever it's worth.
Thank you. Jessica. Got Jessica, Emily, Rachel, Zenko, and Ewan. So you might want to stay seated. Unless you know where you fit in, then.
Tell me when it's time.
Okay. Jessica.
So I thought I would share my experience at the CERT when I heard his name on the merit list, and then maybe a quick comment about the merit list. So, you know, we've just been chanting our service, you know, these key texts, and I'm in it, you know, I'm in the meditative place I'm in when we're doing our chanting service, and I hear his name, and it was like complete shock. Like shock and kind of what? Like a zap of lightning. And thought, why is his name on the list? And then I thought, what's being asked of me here? And you know, the intellectual thought was, well, he was a victim of the kind of violence that's tearing our country apart. Doesn't matter what his beliefs were, he's a victim of that violence. What's being asked of me here? And something in me cracked open just a little bit to include him in that that goodwill. You know, I couldn't get all the way there, but something happened to me, a little bit of a cracking open in what's being asked of me here in response to that really deep shock. And so I guess I would say, who names get on the merit list and how we respond to them in the service, that's part of our practice.
Jessica, could you say a little more about that, you know, that feeling of something cracking open?
It wasn't a thought process. I mean, I feel things kinesthetically, viscerally in my body. And that's what it felt like. I mean, something in my heart chakra, really, basically, just a kind of a crack, a wide, I don't know, like something, like a hard encasement just cracking open a little bit. I don't know what else, how else to describe it.
No, that's perfect. Thank you. Emily.
I also have a thought about the merit list. I think for the Charlie Kirk situation, it's important to note not just that he espoused hate speech, but that he promoted violence against specific communities, including communities that members of the Sangha may also be members of. When we read the merit list, we don't have infinite time. You know, like, we can't put the name of everybody in the world who has died. You know, we have to limit it somehow. And so I think it's worth asking, not that there should be some sort of qualifying criteria to make it on the merit list, but worth asking, what does it mean that we are giving a specific person kind of airtime in the Sangha? Mm-hmm. And I think it's also worth considering, how will this make members of the Sangha feel who maybe members of groups that Charlie Kirk promoted violence against? And is it worth the intellectual exercise of, you know, extending goodwill towards everybody, loving our enemies, things like that? Is that worth it to potentially make certain members of the Sangha feel feelings that they may have felt when someone like Charlie Kirk was explicitly promoting violence against them? I don't have the answer to any of these questions, and I won't pretend to, but I think it's worth considering.
Thank you for bringing that up. Rachel.
When I think about the merit list and things like that, I think of the Buddha story of the spider's web. And that was basically a story of, there is this guy under in the worst hell you can possibly imagine. He was the most terrible man in the world. And I mean, the only thing that he ever did was save a spider. That was it. That was his only good deed. And the Buddha was the one who was walking around and saw him and decided to put down a thread of a spider's web thread, just to see what he would do. And he started climbing up. But when he started climbing up, all the other hungry growths started climbing up with him. And he thought to himself, this spider web's going to break. So he broke it himself. And the Buddha watched him fall down. And he said, what a shame. Had he just climbed up that thread, he could have been a good person. He could have been something. And when I think about that, I think of the merit list as a spider web. We're just giving him a thread. Whether or not he takes it, whether or not he breaks himself, that's on him. All we are trying to do is just say, you were a victim. you were subjected to these delusions, this greed, this hatred. Had it been anything that we have, had it been a certain choice we made or anything else, we could have gone down that path too. We could have easily be him. It doesn't take much. It can be a conversation. It can be the most traumatic experience of your life, and all of a sudden you're full of hate, and you're full of delusion, and you're full of greed.
Lovely. I never heard that story before. Thank you. Zenko.
I wanted to thank you very much for the Dharma talk today. And I wanted to talk about three things really quickly. One was Karl Popper, who was an important philosopher of science, presented us with the paradox of toleration, or the paradox of tolerance, which is that all points of views can and should be tolerated except intolerance. Intolerance is the only thing that really can't be tolerated. And then a term that comes to me through the experience of Japanese Americans who were unfairly imprisoned by the American government during World War II. In Japanese, the term is gaman, which is to bear up to the unbearable with quiet dignity. And it was a term that they used to make it through their wrongful imprisonment in American camps. And then also just I had a previous experience recently with a workplace bully who really did a lot of harm in my small community on a daily basis by choosing hopeful optimism and quiet understanding as a path through difficulties. It didn't necessarily make my day immediately better, but we need to be aware that we're not contributing to willful misunderstandings of our own interdependence. So, and thank you for today's talk.
Thank you. Ewan and then Jinri.
Thanks for the Dharma talk today and for everyone's point of view. It's something that I think I've been processing myself over the last week about my thoughts about it and trying to just get better at not coming to conclusions too early and just sitting with things for a bit longer. But one of the things that I was going to share about metta and loving your enemies, and I'm part of a couple of communities that the far right aren't too fond of, so to speak. And I was at an anti-fascist demonstration yesterday. Unfortunately, they're becoming a weekly occurrence across the UK at the moment, as I'm sure my siblings in the US also appreciate. But one of the things that we talk about quite a lot is that the urge to meet far-right aggression with aggressions of very male-centered urge about that's how men feel useful in a political space, when actually what we know undermines hateful rhetoric in the long term is community, and community can't be built around one subsection of that community. Do you know, we need to have inclusive spaces, and there's quite a lot of violence at the demonstration yesterday from one side. The other, our sides were thankfully held to non-violence, but that doesn't mean that you don't respond to situations. And all I can say from my own experiences of trying to practice metta and getting better at it and feeling admittedly doing it very poorly, particularly around loving people that are throwing Nazi salutes at me or using slurs about disabled people, as I hear virtually every week, is that the more I practice metta, the less I react karmically, as I know Domio often calls it on the Zen Studies podcast, and more I feel I'm able to respond, make a choice, think about how I'm responding. And I do feel that builds more community across what we're trying to do. But what I will also say is that fascists really, really don't like it when you smile at them when they're shouting at you. And it upsets them all the more. So I get to not be angry, and it's more effective. So I don't know if that's of any value to anyone, but I very much needed the talk and discussion today. So thank you.
That is helpful. That is encouraging. Jinryu, and then, yeah.
I too want to thank you very much for this talk. And I don't know what it means to offer merit. To me, that merit list is for recognition, either of someone's trouble and suffering or of their passing. And when I put that name on the merit list, I was in agony for the rest of the week. Because I didn't know how it would be received. It was not my intent by any stretch of the imagination to hurt. It was my intent to recognize an individual who was murdered in the act of free speech. When I put his name on that list, that was a very big deal to me. A week and a half, 2 weeks have gone by. It is a 10 times bigger deal to me. What is happening to us is huge. I have had someone that I respected and cared about snub me because I lean left and she leans right. She found out that I didn't believe the thing she believed in, and I pretty much lost a friend, but that's okay. But the thing that made me feel better about putting his name on the list was this kind of discussion. I thought to myself, if ever there is an opportunity for us to practice all these things that we talk about and the chanting the Metta Sutra and offering love and kindness and so forth, I don't even feel like I'm offering him love and kindness. But I am recognizing the death of someone who died for free speech. And I thought it would be good for us to talk about that. And I was reminded yesterday of my own talk that I gave. And I thought to myself this morning during Zazen, if we all did not lose sight of the true Dharma, we all would have put his name on the merit list. Because we are all one.
Ruthann, did you have something?
Oh, yes, thank you. My daily merit list is longer than Brightway's. And of course, together Sunday, I'm happy to include what's brought up. But Lao Tzu said, allow your enemy an exit. And I consider that an exit from my mind, from my heart, because dwelling on whatever negative hatred, whatever isn't good for the host. For me, I put the shooter on my merit list. How sad that an apparently bright young person thinks that it's okay to shoot someone because you hate them. I mean, they're a product of our education system. And my merit is that he has years ahead of him to contemplate his actions. But it's just like as a hospice volunteer, you know, there are people who have the opportunity to be consciously having time as they leave this life. And if you're holding on to your anger or hatred, who do you want at the end that you're reviewing other than your loved ones and your fan club? So, yes, thank you for this. Hallmark cards does not define love. I like the word respect. You respect me. Do I respect you? Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. I mean, the talk.
Thank you, Ruthann. All right, so we're at 12:14.
Let's do it.
What?
Do it.
What?
Keep calm.
All right. We'll do Abby and Care and then wrap it up. Go ahead, Abby.
Hi, thank you. I appreciate you bringing this up because I think this is something that needs to be talked about. Speaking as a victim of childhood abuse, what you're saying is correct, because when we hate our abusers, that just feeds them, that gives them the energy that they want. And it gives them permission to continue to do the things that we detest. And, you know, the opposite of hate is indifference. And I think that we can have compassion and we can have this agape love, but still be indifferent to what they believe and who they are. And, you know, listening to you, I also thought of Jin Ru's talk a few weeks ago, and she made a comment of how, you know, we're in a very negative time and we've all contributed to some degree. And I think, you know, trying to limit the merit list to people who we agree with continues to contribute to this negative energy. And I think at some point we're also going to, like, what's the limit? Like, what are we going to say is good enough or bad enough to include? And at some point, we're just mirroring what they're doing to everyone around them by deciding who's worthy of the merit list. Because at some point, everybody's going to disagree who's worthy and nobody's going to be happy. And we're all just going to be making a lot of concessions to try and please all of the various groups who are unhappy to some degree. And, you know, to the people who are part of the populations that Charlie Kirk specifically spoke against, if you think about it, if you're not a conservative white Christian male, we're all their enemies. We're all who they want to hurt. We are all who they want to take advantage of. And very few of us are exempt from that. And I think that we need to come together and support each other. And I think that means having some compassion for these people, but also having strong boundaries.
It does occur to me that I and other Zen teachers have added a fair amount to our liturgy to make it more accessible, particularly if you are engaging in it and you don't have context. You haven't learned about it. You just came and this is your first day, and okay, now they're dedicating marriage to Charlie Kirk. Like, okay, what kind of place is this? But we could potentially add something that just to kind of explains something about merit, you know, that makes it a little more clear that when we're dedicating merit, we're just kind of trying to acknowledge, to wish people on their way, to hope for that compassion will win out. Care.
I'll go quick because I know everyone, like, we're at time. But actually, like, when that came up last week, I was like expecting his name to show up. So, because things like this have happened in previous sagas. So I was like, oh, there he is. And then I was like, I knew it was coming. And I was like, okay, I've heard of the queer community. He hates people like me. He probably would be happy if I died, to be honest with you. And he probably wouldn't care either. Maybe he would be happy. I don't know. But when his name came up, I was like, now I have to deal with my pattern of reciprocating hatred with hatred, and I don't actually feel like doing that, but now I have to because here's this name, and all week I've been thinking about that and writing about it, and like I'm reading this article right now about like the way that's by some in some places the way Buddhist scriptures have in some cases been used to justify violence, and I've been reading it and I'm like, this is disgusting, this is horrible, and then I'm like, oh wait, I'm acting this way. Like, so I've been thinking about it, and my reaction to that, I was like angry and complicated, and like I'm afraid of like him and his ideology, like you know what he was doing and promoting, and again he wouldn't care if I died, but like I guess in my brain I was like, okay, well, just all of that aside, I personally don't want to like relish in other people's suffering. Like it just violates my own value system, and that's not like to tell anybody else how to work with their own stuff, just for me personally I'm like, okay, well, kind of like the first person who spoke, I'm sorry I don't know everyone's name in the dirt sendo, but I was like, I don't want to act like you, like okay, fine, you hate me and you're hurting people, but like I need to stick with my own values and figure it out, and kind of be like, kind of like what you were saying, Damio, I'm like, well, you know, I don't actually agree with anything you're doing. Like, you're killing people. You're killing trans people, like trans youth. Like, you're killing people, like racialized folks. You're killing people with your rhetoric. But it's like, well, I'm not going to be like you. I'm not going to agree with you. And I don't like the love word either. It's like more goodwill is helpful to me, where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to sit here and take it. But like, I know I'm judging him, but you know, be the way that you are. And whatever, I'm going to deal with you, but I'm not going to waste my time working myself up and reciprocating this and acting like you. Like, I don't have the bandwidth for that. So that's kind of, that's, but I'm still processing it and I'm still mad and I'm having this, these gross feelings about not liking, I don't like my reaction. So me personally, I don't like how I reacted with this, like, okay, well, this solves problems because one more person, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. So complicated, and again, I'm not imposing that view on anyone else, but that's kind of how I've been processing it, and we'll keep be like continue processing it. So I do appreciate that it was brought up so that I can look at my patterns and my value system and what I, how I want to be and exist in the world. So,
thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, I feel totally ambivalent about reciting his name next week. I don't know. I just, but I should note that the people who left didn't ask us not to recite the merit list, or to take his name off the merit list. They just didn't want to listen to it. So I, you know, I invite you, you know, we can disagree. And I hope nobody, I mean, it does, it hurts my heart to think of anyone feeling out of place. I mean, there's part of me just like, well, get his name off the damn list, right? If anybody, if it's going to make anybody feel like they don't belong or anything, I really don't know. But just a reminder that even though the, you know, we have this aspiration, okay, let's open our hearts and let's, you know, goodwill and let's stop, you know, allowing these folks to continue to hurt us by holding on to the resentment or something, to just you know, really try to refrain from either judging ourselves as successful when we can extend the goodwill, or judging other people as insufficient when they can't, or judging ourselves as insufficient when we can't. There's just a very, we each have an internal journey with this, and I don't think we can fake it, right? So maybe we go through these forms, but we're not. The last thing I would want is for somehow there to be a community culture of like, oh, well, you shouldn't be upset about that because we would love our enemies. You know, there's a time and a place for, you know, anger and setting boundaries and not being ready to extend metta to a certain person or a certain group, depending on your situation. So. All right, with that, abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.